Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Mike Costantino, as usual, sitting across from her. We have a caller today, Dean Baker. Are you on the line?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. I guess we want to talk about affordable health care, also called Obamacare. And when President Obama was running for office, it was one of four major things that he wanted to do when he got in office. And from my point of view, what I see is a guy who's tried to do what he said, and he tried right from the beginning to really deeply reform American health care. Even for Democrats, at least out here, Dean, it was one of the most unpleasant processes I've ever seen a legislature do.
Hold that for a minute. It's exactly true. Now, this is two components, I think, in the public's mind. Good morning, Dean. Mike Costantino.
Good morning. Good morning.
We have two things in the public's mind. We have the economic thing, which is, you know, why Dean Baker's here, or at least part of the reason why Dean Baker's here. And we have the medical part that people want to talk about. So we got, and which none of us are necessarily qualified, and I don't care, maybe everybody is qualified, because everybody's going to take the, so we're going to at least give homage, we're going to say some things about the medical part, but we're certainly going to talk about the economic part. But once again, it's lies and misinformation about this part that seemed to be, I was talking to a realtor the other day. Everything became Obamacare. Everything, no matter what it was. I don't care if it had anything to do with health, it became Obamacare.
I guess we should introduce Dean. He has a doctorate in economics. He's head of the institute in Washington, and he's widely
Center for Economic and Policy Research.
Widely published author. Gosh, I wish I could write so much stuff.
And the reason we're doing this is because
I think Mike's made a good point. Out here, at least, whatever Obamacare or Affordable Care Act was, it got drowned out in people liked Sarah Palin. They really believed her when she said there were death panels, and it just goes on and on. I don't think people in Northern Arizona actually know what's in the act or understand what's going to happen going forward. So, Dean, do you have a comment on that? I mean, we're complaining about the murderously politics of the thing, but the act itself.
Yeah, well, I think there's not a lot of understanding of what's in there. I mean, part of it is that, you know, most of it doesn't actually take effect. There are a few things that took effect already. For example, insurers have to have kids, allow kids to stay on their parents' policy till they're 25. There are a couple other odds and ends that, you know, have already taken effect. But the biggest, the brunt of the bill is that it's going to extend coverage to somewhere in the order of 30 million people who don't currently have it as of 2014. There'll be subsidies for people to buy insurance. It's going to set up insurance exchanges at the state level. These are, for people who don't know what they are, you can click on a website on Google Massachusetts Insurance Connector, and this is RomneyCare. This is what Governor Romney put in place when he was there. You could go in there and say, you know, you're whatever age, you have however many people in your family, and, you know, it gives you a list of policies and, you know, tells you what they cover and this and that. Anyhow, so that will set that up beginning 2014. There'll be subsidies for low and moderate income people to make it affordable, and it has this mandate. So you'll be required to get the care, and if you know, get some type of insurance. If you don't have it through your employer, you aren't covered by Medicaid, you're obligated to do it. If you don't do that, then you pay a fine. And this is what the Supreme Court upheld back in June.
And there's an opt-out there. Is that where the opt-out is?
Well, you could opt out and pay a fine. That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And, you know, to my mind, probably the most important thing, it does extend coverage, that's a great thing, but probably the most important thing about it is that it requires that insurers cover people regardless of pre-existing conditions. And this is absolutely huge.
Huge.
Michael, Michael Moore's film Sicko. I mean, that was in a lot of ways the main story there, because one hand, you have people that, you know, for whatever reason, most often because they can't afford it, but that's not always the reason, they don't have insurance. And we understand those people are going to have trouble if they get sick. But people who do have insurance, this is the bulk of the population, we recognize a lot don't, but people who do have insurance have the problem. I'm in this boat. If I got a serious illness, well, at some point, I mean, I run my place, but, you know, at some point, I'm, you know, I can't stay on the payroll if I'm not working. And I'm going to lose my insurance because I'm not working. And at that point, you know, I have this existing condition, you know, it's a heart, whatever it might be. If I want to get insured as an individual, you know, insurance companies are going to tell me $50,000 a year, maybe more, if they'll insure me at all. So what Obamacare does that I think is so important is it requires that if you're insured, you're always going to be able to get, you're always going to be able to pay, you know, at standard rate, so they aren't allowed to discriminate against you based on if you've had cancer, if you've had some other conditions. You get insured at the standard rate, which in principle should mean that for the vast majority of people, it's affordable. So that, to my mind, is the biggest part of the program. Takes effect in 2 years, and I think it's really unfortunate that, you know, from President Obama's standpoint, that he's running for re-election, people still don't have a clear idea what it is. If this had taken effect, say, January 2012, people would understand, here's what Obamacare is. A lot of people may still not like it, who knows, but at least they would understand what it is.
Right. People seem to like all the provisions that have come into effect so far. The you have to cover your children, or the companies you work for have to cover your kids' insurance, if you have family insurance, until they're 26 years old. That's affect millions of young people. But I think the most controversial thing, and is the mandate, and that's been in Republican and conservative talk and planning since like 1989. And the mandate insists that you take some responsibility in covering your, in paying for insurance, even if it's heavily subsidized, that covers you, so you don't go running into the emergency room, so you don't go not paying your doctor bills.
Yeah, and there's a real logic to this. I mean, the point is it fits in with the idea that we're going to require insurers to cover everyone regardless of their condition, because the problem is if you do that and you don't have something like the mandate, I'll come back to that in a second, you don't have something like the mandate, then, you know, I'm in good health. You know, I go, hey, you know, why should I waste my money on insurance? Because, you know, for now, I don't see doctors much, you know, whatever, I'll pay for it out of pocket. Then if, you know, it turns out next year I get a serious illness, well, then I'll buy insurance. Well, if everyone does that, then the market collapses. So that's the logic of the mandate. Now, I think, you know, from a political standpoint and possibly also from a policy standpoint, I think doing it this way was a mistake because it sounds really bad to people.
Right.
And you could get something very similar in terms of the outcome if you just gave people incentives. You said, okay, you want to do that, well, then if you do get sick, if you want to try and play this game, if you do get sick, we won't cover you for 3 years.
So you know,
so that doesn't look like a good game, you know. So the point is you want to give people the incentive, and I think it's a little hard for the Republicans. They're claiming, you know, going around yelling about the mandate. It'd be a little harder, I think, for them to yell about it, saying that, oh, they're not going to cover you for 3 years. Well, that kind of goes the other way. What exactly are they saying?
Well, it's basically an idea that came out of Republican think tanks. It's part of Romney Care, of course.
Well, there's a lot less screaming about the mandate since the Supreme Court upheld it.
And apparently it's worked in Massachusetts pretty well. I mean, people
they're covering people something like 97-98%.
Right.
So, you know, the track record there, you know, if Romney wanted to run on that, I think, you know,
it could be a good plan. Yeah,
he'd have a good story to tell.
Beat the hell out of what he's running on lately. The two things I heard down at the coffee shop when I heard 2014 and I heard mandate, then the bets started flying around that it went below 50-50. I'll be honest with you, Dean. The bets were not going Obama's way. The other thing we knew is when these things started to take effect and people actually got health care, They wouldn't have cared. For some of those guys down at the coffee shop, just the extension of kids to 26, till their 26th birthday, was enough. Just knowing that their pre-existing condition was going to be covered was enough. So all of a sudden, all of their arguments became really, really hollow and still are. And when you have things like this in Arizona, we lose $1.2 billion if we opt out. And that's why I asked about that opt out pay. I mean, 20,000 jobs.
This is the aspect of Obamacare that extends and increases Medicaid coverage.
Right, yeah,
that's
the state,
right.
The state
that's
part
right.
of it. Well, yeah, we're talking about the state part of it. In Arizona, of course, we call that access for those people. That, you know, we have a different name for Medicaid. We call it access.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unfortunate. I mean, to my mind, I think it was unfortunate that the Supreme Court made the ruling. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. It seemed to me a strange ruling, but in any case, they made that ruling. But from the standpoint of individual states, obviously most states are not going to opt out. My guess is that the ones that do in time probably are going to change their mind because they're throwing a lot of money in the toilet. So,
well, and even in Arizona, you're not hearing that. Jan Brewer gets calls from hospital presidents on a daily basis and says, look, you're squeezing us already. You can't put us out of business if you take all of this away, too.
Yeah, I think over time, you have people in office, your governor may be one of them, who are just going to say no, no, no. But, you know, look, you're going to have elections. It's going to be an ongoing issue. And, you know, people are going to be running saying, you know, look, the federal government's prepared to hand us a lot of money to help people get insured, to help our hospitals meet their bills. Do you want to take it or no? This happened, if you go back to the original stimulus back in 2009, there were a number of Republican governors who, you know, got really holy about it and said, oh, no, we're not going to take this money. Almost all of them turned around and subsequently took it because, you know, it's pretty hard if you're a governor and, you know, everyone needs money. You know, there aren't a lot of states that are sitting there with big piles of money that they don't know what to do with. So, you know, here is the federal government prepared to give you money. And even if, you know, it might not be what you would most like to do with it, it's pretty hard to just say, oh, no, don't give it to us. Give it to another state.
What about the Republican charge that this is going to hurt Medicaid coverage? They got a tremendous amount of mileage. Certainly out in Arizona by claiming Democrats were cutting Medicare for different figures, but $713 billion. Does anything in Obamacare cut benefits to anyone?
Well, I mean, what it does with Medicare is it does try to keep the program intact. I mean, one of the things that Governor Romney hasn't really explained, he says he's not going to have the cuts, the savings, I'll come back to that in a second, in Medicare. But if he doesn't do that, then the program first faces shortfall in 2016. So if he actually were president, it would be during his first term in office. So he's going to have to do something, you know, and it's not clear. You know, he'd have to reappropriate money. I mean, I don't mean to say it's impossible, but you'd have to do something because, you know, at least in the current trajectory, by the projections from the Congressional Budget Office and others, they wouldn't have enough money. But what President Obama's program does is it does cut back payments for drugs, payments to hospitals. And this was actually negotiated with the process, and it's something I wasn't altogether happy about. I mean, he brought in the drug industry from the very beginning. He brought in the hospitals from the very beginning, and he negotiated with them. He said, what can you take? And so these were cuts that were done in negotiation with the providers, and the idea was that Medicare would continue to provide the same service, but they would be paying somewhat less to providers and to drug companies. And, you know, you hear people saying, well, we won't be able to find doctors, this and that. You know, there are doctors that won't take Medicare now. They'll continue to be. The idea that doctors will leave Medicare wholesale, I've had arguments with people. I go, will you please think about that for a moment? Because they go, oh, well, they'll all go and serve rich people. They go, well, that's fine, but I don't know of any rich people that don't have doctors today.
Yeah, they don't have a problem getting medical care if you have.
Yeah, so if you look at all the doctors who are currently taking Medicare and they all go, oh, no, I'm going to stop taking it. I'll go serve, you know, whatever. People could afford to pay me more. Well, those people already have doctors.
And the reason for this, right, is it's going to increase, by 30 million people, the number of people covered by medical insurance. And so when people show up in a hospital, there'll be that many more people covered by insurance, and therefore the hospitals can reduce some of these crazy charges and stuff.
And I know we're in a really heightened emotional campaign right now, but the name of the act is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, and the PR says that coupled with the Health Care and Education Reconciliation Act, and all this around is March 2010, its stated goals was to control costs and improve care. Those are the two things. And we've talked a lot about, well, we've talked a lot about both, but we've kind of started this by talking about care, and we want to, and now we're talking about costs, and this is a part of the main complaint, at least what we hear a lot.
So what Obamacare does is have a plan to extend. One of the things it does is extend the length of the survival of Medicare if we don't do anything, right?
Exactly. It extends it to 2024, and it's sort of funny because the Republicans have been yelling, well, what's your plan to, you know, keep Medicare solvent? Well, it had been projected to first face a shortfall in 2016, extend 8 years, and probably more importantly, it has a 75-year horizon, and he reduced the shortfall over that horizon by about two-thirds. So, you know, to say, well, he hasn't done anything, you know, just if that's your standard here, what's he doing to maintain the solvency? Well, he eliminated two-thirds of the shortfall. That's a pretty good start. Now, obviously, you're going to have to do more. Again, one of the things that people always have to have front and center in their mind, we pay more than twice as much per person for our health care as the average for other wealthy nations, you know, Germany, Canada, France, whoever you throw in
it's
that.
It's about $8,000 a year we pay, is it?
Yeah, it's more a bit more than that now. Yeah, and it's projected to continue to rise rapidly. And, you know, that we have very little show for that. I mean, we don't live longer. We live, you know, our life expectancies are near the bottom. Infant mortality rates are, you know, near the top. I mean, among wealthy nations, obviously poor countries have worse outcomes. But I'm thinking of, you know, the ones we might think is comparable to the U.S. So we have an enormous amount of waste in the system. And this, I think, is a step towards reducing it. No doubt, we have to go much further. I think anyone would have to agree with that. But it's a little, you know, odd for the Republicans to be blaming, you know, President Obama for not having solved all the problems when he's certainly done more towards that than any president since, you know, Medicare first came into existence.
Yeah, I think that important for people to understand about Obamacare? It's very much like Romney Care, right? Romney's running away from his record in governor, but this is the main thing he did.
Yeah, and it is, I mean, it's kind of ironic because Jonathan Gruber is an economics professor at MIT, played a central role in designing Romney Care, and he also was brought in to design Obama's plan, and, you know, he was asked about this, he goes, it's the same damn plan, you know, there's not, obviously it has to be somewhat different at the national level than, you know, if you're doing it for just one state, but, you know, the whole thing was intended to be the same plan, same principles, and the idea that somehow, you know, Romney Care could be a good idea, but, you know, Obamacare is an abomination. I mean, that's nuts. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Now, you could say
I don't like both
of them, but, you know, if you like one, you can't think the other one's horrible.
Exactly, and they've tried to separate, and it's unbelievable how they've been able to do that. But I would like, as a human being living in this part of the century, I would like to just kind of do a wait and see. We just don't do that anymore, but a nice little wait and see to see how many kids get covered, to see how many guys 57 who are driving Jeeps in Sedona get covered. I want how many 60-year-old women in Sedona can see Medicare on the horizon but just got to live long enough to get it. You know, what's going to happen to their insurance? I want the owner of radio stations to know what's going to happen to his four employees and how much is it going to cost him, if anything, when it kicks in 2014. I want to say, why haven't the Democrats published, why hasn't some economist published 10, 15 scenarios? Okay, here you are, at least to cover out of the 30 million people that are going to get covered, to cover, you know, 10 or 12 eventualities.
Well, you know, there's all sorts of things that have been printed on it, so I don't know if anything exactly fits that bill. But, you know,
you're right. I'm getting pretty specific. I want something to fit my bill. I'm getting right wing, and that I want what I want. Go ahead.
Anyhow, no, I mean, you know, at this point, we're a year and a half out from, you know, the main provisions taking effect. Less than that, I guess, about 15 months at this point. And, you know, look, it was very, very far from my ideal bill. I'd have preferred universal Medicare, you know, second best, at least have a public option. We didn't get that, but you know, look, this is on the table. It's going to be there in 15 months, and, you know, you have to work from what you have. I mean, you know, we don't get to come there with a clean slate and just write up, here's what our healthcare system is going to look like. So this is in law. Some of it's already taken effect. Most of it goes effect in 15 months, and, you know, we're going to see. I'm sure there'll be problems. Hopefully, you know, the benefits are going to outweigh those problems, but, you know, I think the right way to look at it is, okay, we're going to see. There's clearly a lot of things to think, a lot of reasons to think it's going to be very good, and the problems that arise, which they will, you see how you fix them. And, you know, again, we got to move a lot forward because, you know, we're paying way too much for our care. Again, I think it does some things to contain costs, but we still are way out of line with the rest of the world. We have a long, long way to go.
Yeah, I when I look at what's happened, I see the huge irrational discussion, and I think Mike and I agree with you, Medicare for All would be the simplest,
absolutely,
cheapest,
single-payer health,
best way to control cost that we can imagine. And we did watch Obama, and I think a lot of Democrats were disturbed by how much compromises he made with the drug companies. I mean, the medical industry is one of the most powerful, wealthiest industries in the United States, has, I think, close to the most. Maybe the financial industry has a few more, but otherwise it's like up in the top two, I think, in terms of number of lobbyists in Washington.
Yeah, Wall Street has more, but that's okay with splitting hairs.
Yeah, and, you know, the healthcare industry is an enormous cesspool, and, you know, I give Obama credit politically for having gotten this through. You know, again, he made a lot of deals I wish he didn't have to make. Maybe there was no choice. Maybe
that's right. Maybe this is the best deal we could have. You know, those of us sitting out here that operate on logic and reason, and he had to operate with existing Washington emotions. But 83,000 Scorpion venom care, hopefully after 2014, will be a thing of the past. Don't be wrong, I expect to see a lot of headlines every time there's, like you said, something in the healthcare plan that costs a lot, or they watch it go a particular direction. Boom, there'll be a headline. And hopefully the responsible press will also make the same headline, that 30 million people, instead of going to L.A. for 5,000 people show up at the Coliseum to wherever it was in L.A. to get health care, and they had many thousands more that needed it, that won't happen quite so often when people are actually in the business of finding their own doctors and getting their own care.
Yeah, and we'll see what it gets. I mean, one of the interesting things, and it was kind of funny because I guess I knew about this but completely forgotten. A lot of people got checks, and I was one of them. My wife and I got a check from our insurance company because they're required to spend at least 80% of their premiums on actually providing care.
Oh, my gosh.
Turned out they
definitely
didn't hit that.
Socialism.
They don't hit it. They had to rebate the money. And it was, I don't know, it was $170. It wasn't a huge amount, but, you know, it was nice to get. And, you know, there were something like 5 million people around the country that got those checks. So, you know, there are things in there that, you know, I think, as I say, I remember it. When I got the check, I remembered, oh, yeah, that 80% provision. But it totally slipped my mind. It wasn't something I usually associated with the bill. And, you know, so it would be good if that gets attention. And, you know, the original discussion, you know, with the death panels that you're mentioning before, I mean, I was just amazed by this because you're going, what on earth are you talking about? And I remember there's a paper, I don't know how widely it's circulated out there, but Politico, it's a big thing, at least in Washington. And they send out questions to people every morning, and I'm on their list. I don't have 100, 200 people, so I'm on their list, get it every morning. So their question, this was back in 2010, it said, is Sarah Palin advancing her political career by engaging President Obama in a debate on end-of-life care? And this was her death panel line. And, you know, I was just like, she's not engaging in a debate. She's making garbage up. And they're treating like this is somehow, you know, a serious position, a credible thing that someone could argue with. She's just making stuff up.
Well, and that's what happens, and it happens to so many of us, Dean, when they do this, when they make stuff up, and we get flustered, and we, you know, I feel like, you know, Leghorn Foghorn, you know, I want to, that's just not right. And yet, you know, they're skipping off into the woods because they've got me, because
the latest
I don't have a response.
One, seems to me that Democrats really tend to be when they're blindsided by complete lies, they kind of don't know how to respond. And, you know, one of Romney's latest ones is that Obama is weakening the work requirements of welfare.
Welfare.
He just totally made up, but they repeated enough times. And Democrats are always scurrying around. They're trying to be rational when they're getting, you know, hit from these weird angles.
Yeah, we're changing subject a little bit, but it's the lie factor with Obamacare that is so hard to put out those fires. Guns are being covered, you know, like Obama has said zero words about guns, but gun sales are going through the roof, and every gun leader, if there is such a thing, every gun lobbyist is saying he's going after your guns based on some obscure comment in a UN resolution.
Yeah, well, I mean, I consider the responsibility of the media to call out these things when, you know, people are making stuff up and it's just not true. And, you know,
I don't see the media calling it out. They're calling out that you get the lies that, and they're not calling them as lies. That's the parts that's missing,
yeah.
Dean.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I'm saying. And, you know, and this is the sort of thing, they, in principle, have the time to do that. And when they don't do that, you know, you hear, oh, Sarah Palin's engaging President Obama in a debate on end-of-life care. You know, like, that's a serious viewpoint when she's just making, there's no debate here, you know. But when they say that, they're giving it credibility that, of course, it doesn't deserve. It's just a flat-out lie and should be called that.
So Obamacare, the full measure of the stuff will come in to play in 2014, and you'll no longer have any caps on your lifetime.
Caps on, yeah. That's right. This is something, you know, most of us hopefully will never encounter. But, you know, a lot of insurance, they have a cap, $1 million or whatever it might be. You know, it's usually fairly high. But on the other hand, if you have cancer, you know, recurrences, you know, or heart disease, you could hit that, you know.
And you could go right over it, yeah.
Yeah, and then people find, well, you thought you had insurance. You don't. You know, it's not going to do you any good. So that cap is removed. There's a few, others. I mean, it's, you know, however many, you know, 1,700 pages. There's a lot of other provisions, but, you know, I think most of it are things like that I think people agree with. Most people agree with it. You know, I've seen polling on this stuff across the political spectrum, Republicans, Democrats. They don't think people should be discriminated against based on pre-existing conditions. You know, it's not insurance if, you know, you can't get it if you're sick. I mean, it's just saying, oh, we're willing to take your money as long as you're healthy. Which obviously is a good deal for the insurance company, but that doesn't really do you a lot of good in terms of making sure you're covered if you have a problem.
Towards this end, I want to make sure that the folks listening get, there's I Get Obamacare Coalition. If you're looking for some more of the information we talked about today, certainly, and not so much the economic part, but certainly the care part. I Get Obama Coalition. Find it online. There's a printed form. There's a Hal and Tony Stahl, I guess, or the money behind this, but it's called the Affordable. The handout is called the Affordable Health Care Act. Know what the act does for you and your family. So find it online.
So how would you sum up, Dean? And we've got 2 minutes left. How would you sum up Obamacare? And I think you make a good point. None of the legislation we ever pass is perfect the first time out, so it's going to have to be modified.
Well, I think it's a bill that's going to extend insurance coverage to most of the people who are not insured. Some people fall through the cracks. The largest group that will fall through the cracks are immigrants who aren't here legally, undocumented workers. They're, you know, a large group who are not going to be helped by this, and that was by design. I mean, that was something that they put into the bill to make it more palatable to some of the people that were reluctant to vote for it.
You mean the people driving our buses and taking care of our children and driving our cabs aren't going to be
helped? A lot of those people aren't going to be covered, at least not under the Act. I mean, in some cases, they do have insurance through other routes, but the Act does not help them.
Yeah, got it. And, yeah, I, you know, this is a point I want. I want the people flying my planes, driving my buses, driving my cabs, taking care of my children, teaching. I mean, the aide in my classroom, or for that matter, operating the machinery around my house. I would like them to have health care, in fact, good health care, so they come to work not sick. But maybe that's too much to hope.
As you can tell, Dean, this is kind of an emotional issue out here in that we listen to hours and hours and weeks of lies. Thank you for being with us. We always enjoy having you.
This is Dean's third time on here. Yeah, this is getting like, I don't know. You're a lot of content on our show, and it's good content, and we appreciate it.
I appreciate being on. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much, Dean. Next week, we have Angela Lefevre, Doug Ballard, candidates for LD1 representative. The week after, we have Tom Chabon and Jim Ledbetter. Tom is a big defender of education. Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.